This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're talking about employment law. We're coming back to where we were not quite 2 months ago about pre-employment inquiries. We had a very good response to that program, and so we're going to talk some more about it. We'll talk about some things that we didn't even get to then. We'll start with what can and can't be asked by an employer in a pre-employment interview. My returning guests are employment law attorneys Thomas Lenz. He's a partner in the statewide law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo. His office, Tom's office, is in Cerritos. My other guest is Scott Stillman, an associate in the San Francisco law firm of McGuinn, Hillsman, and Pilepsky. And Tom Lenz is also a member of the executive committee of the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, which is the entity which is funding this particular program that we're doing. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights generally is by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Gentlemen, thanks for calling back, or coming back.
Thank you, Chuck.
This time, Tom, you're here and you don't have to call back.
My pleasure to be here.
I'm very pleased that you are here. Let's start, if you would, Scott, with talking a little bit about social media. Everybody is into social media, and of course, much of the programming that I do is about how people have to be careful about how much information they put on their social media, because that could be the basis for identity theft, possibly. But that's, we're not going to get into that. But what's your concern from the employment law standpoint?
Well, Chuck, first, thanks again for having me back on. And regarding social media, it's a hot topic right now, and it's one that's ever-changing. I mean, we have new developments coming out every day. You know, there's an Instagram today, tomorrow it's Snapchat. I mean, who kind of knows what's next? But the legislation has tried to respond to some of this social media stuff. And as far as a pre-employment inquiry into social media goes, an employer cannot require somebody applying for a job to give the employer their username or their password in order for the employer to access their social media account.
At any time, either before hiring or after hiring, is that correct?
After hiring, it gets a bit different. You at that point, if it's part of, say, a workplace investigation, then they may be required to divulge some information from their social media account. But if it goes back to the actual pre-employment inquiry, then you're not going to be required or requested. You shouldn't be, to give up your username or password. Mm-hmm. Likewise, let's say you're sitting down with the person who's interviewing you. He or she has a computer there before them. You know, typically these job interviews will take place in somebody's office. They've got a computer sitting there. They might be tempted to say, you know, pull up Facebook. Can you log in for me? Just, I want to make sure that everything's okay. That's also not permitted under the law. So you can't be requested to log in front of the employer as a kind of workaround to the username password prohibition.
Tell us why would an employer be interested in looking in or trying to see what's on the social media for a prospective employee? Why would that be of interest to an employer?
It's remarkable, Chuck, that I've seen employers who they want to know, I think, many times in good faith, are they hiring somebody who is responsible, who they can count on to do the job? Is there going to be something that's a red flag as to their activities, their issues perhaps with a prior employer, the lifestyle they lead? And frankly, it's dangerous. It's a be careful what you wish for scenario. And I think many employers will dig around to see what they can find on applicants if they have publicly visible accounts, be it Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, what have you. And I think that anyone who is applying for employment and has a publicly visible account should reasonably expect that an employer they are approaching about an employment opportunity is going to find what they have. I think word to the wise is privacy settings if you're an applicant, and word to the employer is be careful what you wish for, because you may find things that are helpful. You may find things that are completely irrelevant and could color the waters in terms of an employment dispute later. I think that many times it can be interesting information, can be helpful, but it can be troubling.
How are, in your respective experiences in dealing with your clients, how aware are employers of the fact that they are not permitted to ask for your username or your password, or look into, if as a prospective employee, look into that person's social media? How aware are these employers of this?
I think the larger employers, and the corporations with established HR departments will know about Labor Code Section 980 that was recently enacted. But your smaller to mid-size employers are probably less likely to be sophisticated in that area. There's not only the California law, but there's a whole body of law that's developing under federal labor law with the National Labor Relations Board. And it's amazing how much workplace impact social media has.
I understand. It's very significant.
And if I can just throw
a question, if you don't mind. If someone is interviewing with an employer and that prospective employee doesn't realize that the employer does not have the legal right to ask for the username or the password for the prospective employee's social media, and the employer does that, and subsequently the let's say the employee all of a sudden realizes, oh no, I remember reading something that says the employer can't do that, and said, I'm sorry, I can't let you do that. And the employer then says, well, I'm not interested in you. Is there some kind of a potential lawsuit that prospective employee might have against the employer for violating Labor Code Section 980?
I think that that's a very real risk for an employer. Yes, because essentially you're making an unlawful request a condition of employment. And I could see that easily being an issue that would be litigated, and I think that employer would face some high risk.
Yes.
Yeah, and
interesting.
I do think that if an employee refuses to comply with that and then is discriminated against or retaliated against for not complying, that they absolutely do have a case. But the state labor commissioner is actually not required to investigate or take these claims. So it would be...
It's a difficult case, yeah.
And it would be something that would be a private right of action. The person would have to find an attorney. So it's nice that we have Labor Code 980, but the enforcement side of this, you're not going to find it in the government.
I see.
And I do think that it's an important point, because we could talk about what the law is all day, and then there's the practical side of this.
It doesn't meet it. You know, when was this enacted into law?
I believe it was 2013.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's been around for approximately a year plus or whatever.
Yes.
All right. Anything else about social media that you want to touch upon before we go on to the next topic, which I think will be immigration status?
Well, you touched on at the beginning of the topic, but I really do urge people to think about what they post, because it is absolutely can get you in trouble, and not everyone needs to see what you've been doing at the latest party you attended.
or something to the effect, overthrow the government. You don't want to do that. Or all employers are...
although there's a whole body of federal labor law suggesting that even things that an employer finds offensive may still be legally protected.
Because of the First Amendment.
As well as potentially being concerted.
Concerted activity, where you're acting together in a way to bring, enforce your rights.
I see. Very, very good. All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night, everybody. It is the last Wednesday of the month. I see some attorneys there who do not have phones to their ears. Oh, no, that's not good. Here's the number, 1-800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer. We have eight attorneys in the conference room here, all interested in talking with you, workers' compensation law, criminal law, Social Security law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, and two attorneys for employment law, because the topic on the air, of course, is employment law. And then tax law, real estate, also real estate broker, and then patent law, aviation law. Tomorrow, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, Leon Baer, will be available to talk with you about your problems with creditors, and I will, in the second half hour of the program, I'll give you his phone number. So if you'd like to talk with any of the eight attorneys who are here, it's 1-800-525-9917. At the break of the program, which will be about 7:27, I'll give you the local phone number so you can call in and speak with my guests on the air. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program, continued program, on pre-employment inquiries. We're covering such things as social media, immigration status, medical marijuana, and religion in this first half hour. And for those of you who have questions and listen to us live, please be patient. We'll take your calls in a few minutes. All right. On immigration status, citizenship, what can or cannot be asked about this? If we've got someone who's an undocumented person, what rights or what can that person who's applying for a job expect? Or what can the employer inquire about to make sure that the employer is hiring someone who is here legally? Tom, please.
An employer is allowed to ask whether someone is legally eligible to work in the United States. And I think many people, many of the listeners will be familiar with the I-9 form. That is typically the vehicle for doing that. The I-9 form is something the federal government creates and requires employers to complete. And it is something where the employee is, in turn, supposed to present proof of employment eligibility by the employee's choice of documents that are listed on that form. So,
is that a form? Is the I-9 form something that in a pre-employment interview that the prospective employee is required to sign
it's
at the request of the employer?
It's typically a post-offer thing.
I see. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. All right. But continue. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh, no problem. The I-9 lays out a selection of documents. The employer is not allowed to choose the documents that the employee will present. That is a frequent misunderstanding. And I've encountered employers who have routinely requested driver's license and Social Security card, for example. And
that's a violation of the law.
It would violate the law to require that. Those two documents could be chosen by the
Prospective employee.
But it has to be the employee's choice. The employee could choose a number of things, a passport, driver's license and Social Security card or other listed documents, among which are visas and so forth. But it's something where the employee has the burden of putting forth the documents of his or her choice, and then provided that they are reasonably genuine on their face, the employer is required to accept that.
Yeah, okay. And I think the real purpose behind this law is we don't want employers discriminating against people because of their citizenship. And so the law has tried to develop a way as best it can to provide some protection for people while still letting employers make sure they're hiring people who are legally, here to work in the U.S. as the law requires them to do. So, I mean, by way of just very straightforward example, if you're in that job interview and you're asked, are you a citizen of the U.S., that would not be an appropriate question.
It would not be.
It would not be. But if you said, are you authorized to work here in the U.S.?
That's interesting.
That's okay, because you've rephrased the question
I see.
To get around the straight-up citizenship answer. So it's kind of one of those areas where the law can't entirely do the job because it's being asked to do two things at once, protect people from not being discriminated against based on their citizenship while still making sure the employer complies with their duties under the law.
Would you refresh those of us who may, and I'm speaking certainly for myself, there was some proposal, and I'm sure you both know about it, whereby, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, whereby undocumented persons would be authorized to obtain driver's licenses in California. Am I going too far on that, or is that correct?
There have been measures that were introduced in Sacramento.
But they have not been enacted into law?
I do believe that it has been enacted.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
So in that situation, in that driver's license that an undocumented person gets, in that the employer can be criticized, if not perhaps fined, by hiring someone who, let's say, isn't legally authorized to work here, if the driver's license doesn't really establish that that person is authorized to work, how does an employer protect him, her, or itself?
It's my understanding that the driver's license is flagged.
There
is a mark on that that will reflect that it's someone who does not satisfy the...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Essentially,
what
we're concerned with here, the employment eligibility.
Certainly, I think we're all aware that it is not impossible for someone who is undocumented to get a counterfeit driver's license. What are employers doing to assure themselves that this person and this driver's license is legitimate, or are they entitled under the law, if shown what appears to be a legitimate driver's license, to accept that and therefore can feel comfortable that they will not be prosecuted or have some action brought against the employer by the government?
I think as long as it looks reasonably genuine, mm-hmm. That there's no sign that it is fake, you don't have mm-hmm. a picture falling out of the card, which I've...
Or the wrong picture on the card that didn't look like the employee.
Right, and I've run into situations like that with my client where the picture fell out, or maybe you have a group of people applying and the driver's license numbers are consecutive.
Yes.
With the group of applicants. Yeah, those are things that might raise suspicions.
Yeah, yeah, I would
and,
think
and
so.
And I think that... from my understanding, a lot of employers, once presented with documentation that looks legitimate, kind mm-hmm. of take a hands-off approach from there because you can also get into a sticky situation where checking Social Security numbers comes back at times saying that this person didn't have a valid Social Security, but names change and numbers get mixed up, mm-hmm. and you get a lot of false positives when you do these Social Security background checks.
Well,
So it is an issue that employers, from what I found, generally, if the documentation looks okay, then...
They can rely on that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else about immigration status before we move on to medical marijuana?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's talk briefly about medical marijuana and what do you want to? Obviously, a doctor can make a recommendation. It's not a prescription. It's a recommendation that this person can or should use medical marijuana. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. And so someone has this recommendation on him or her. What is the employer's concern? Can the employer, in a pre-employment interview, ask somebody, do you have a medical marijuana recommendation? Can the employer ask that?
I'm not sure that that's a legitimate question.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I think because that's going into what a doctor is discussing with the individual.
So that's confidential information.
Yeah, I think that would go to medical condition, and there's a whole line of discrimination law that prohibits discrimination based on medical condition or perceived medical condition.
So that's going too far then.
Yeah,
what I've said.
You have a certain right to privacy to some of that information, and I do think that crosses a boundary line. Mm. But that's not to say, though, that you can't be drug tested as you're applying for a job. That is allowed. Mm-hmm. And if it comes back positive for THC, then you certainly can be denied the job based upon that drug test result.
Okay. Let's take a brief break. This is our Call a Lawyer night. I see the lawyers are getting busy picking up the phones. I don't know if they're just trying to do their exercises with the phones. Okay, we have three phones that are open right now. 1-800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer night. This is your opportunity to talk with anyone or more than one of our attorneys here who are devoting their time to try to be helpful to you. No obligation on your part whatsoever. I will let you know who these people are in the second half part of the program, but we have attorneys here for workers' compensation law, criminal law, social security law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate, patent law, aviation law, lemon law, and tomorrow bankruptcy law, if you like. But 1-800-525-9917. In about 10 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls on the air at 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on employment law and the things that employers can and cannot ask about during a pre-employment interview with this prospective employee. My guests are both employment law attorneys, Scott Stillman and Tom Lentz. And let me come back to the medical marijuana thing. So you are telling us then that in the pre-employment, Tom, the pre-employment interview, the employer, let's say this is a job that would require someone to be driving a vehicle, whether it's a delivery position or whether it's, let's say, someone who's an insurance salesman, life insurance, automobiles insurance or something like that, and has to go out and meet with people, but it requires driving. You're saying in the pre-employment interview, the employer cannot inquire about whether or not that person uses marijuana?
I think it goes to that right to privacy issue.
Really?
But
wow.
I think it's important to look at the drug test option that Scott talked about. And I think it's also important to look at the essential functions of the job pursuant to disability law. Are you able to perform these duties you know, with or without accommodation, which is a fairly standard question. And I think depending upon what the drug test reveals, depending upon, you know, what the answers are to those questions, I would move from there.
Let me make sure that I understand this then. In a pre-employment interview or prior to someone being offered a job, are you saying that the employer can request that that person have a drug test?
That
would be all right.
That would be, yes.
Okay, that is okay prior to employment.
And I mean, it's a very confusing area of the law.
I would think so.
Because I think employees are confused. I think employers are confused. And the law is developing constantly on this because you have different acts such as the Compassionate Use Act that passed in California. Mm-hmm. And here you have a state law which is saying that you, as an employee, are allowed to use medical marijuana if given the proper recommendation. That abuts up against federal law, which considers marijuana to be an illegal drug under the Controlled Substance Act.
Yes.
And so I think most employees would think, oh, you know, a doctor recommended for me to use this, I'll be fine using it on the job and my employer will understand. And that's not going to be the case under the law.
Yeah.
There was actually a case brought where the plaintiffs tried to challenge a city who was closing down the medical marijuana dispensary.
Mm-hmm.
And the plaintiffs challenged it under the American with Disabilities Act, saying, you're taking away a public service that we are entitled to. And the city came back and said, well, under the ADA, a person with a disability has to be a qualified individual. In order to be a qualified individual, you can't be taking any illegal drugs. But the plaintiffs came back and said, actually, it says that if your doctor recommends you and prescribes this drug, that then you could take it and still be considered a qualified individual. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the Ninth Circuit said, sorry, Congress, under the Controlled Substance Act, says it's an illegal drug. Mm-hmm. Federal law is going to trump whatever the state law says.
The local or state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Before we end the statewide version of the program, which will end in about 3 minutes or so, I'd like you to touch upon the issue of religion and what can and can't be asked in a pre-employment interview. Tom, what is that?
Well, I think right off the bat, it's important for employers to know that religion, the practice of a religion, is protected, and it's not something that employment decisions can typically hinge on unless religion is some sort of bona fide occupational qualification. For example, if you were the diocese or the archdiocese and you wanted a priest, you could hire someone who you insist be Catholic.
Yes.
If you were in another faith, it would be similar for someone to lead that particular faith, that organization. But if you are looking at positions that are not religious in their scope of duties, the nature of what they do, it really is not something that should be a factor in the employment decision.
What if someone has a particular type of dress that is part of their religion? How does an employer have to deal with that?
I think that's a real sensitive issue for for many employers, and particularly if they have dress codes. And I think unless there's really a bona fide need for someone to appear a particular way, I think the employer is going to have to bend and address.
Yeah, the employer has an obligation to reasonably accommodate somebody's religious beliefs as long as it doesn't impose an undue hardship on the employer. And the undue hardship part is where things get tricky because it's a whole plethora of factors. How big is this employer? What's the nature of the accommodation that's being requested? How much is it going to cost the employer? And so a lot of it does come back to the job duties themselves. I mean, for instance, there was a case where it was a Sikh employee who wanted to have a beard,
yes,
but his job functions required that he wear a respiratory mask that had a gas-tight seal around his face.
Yes.
And in that situation, the court said it'd be an undue hardship to have him to be allowed to keep his beard.
So they either he had to shave his beard or he wasn't eligible to be on this job.
Yeah, or, and a possible reasonable accommodation could be moving to another job that he could do within that job.
We are coming to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you who listen to us for the full hour, we will continue. Whether you're listening to us in the Bay Area or listening to us on the internet at www.kalw.org. It is just about 7:28 and a half at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. This is our monthly Call a Lawyer night. We have eight attorneys here. Do we, Martin, have eight attorneys here? I guess we do. Let me tell you who they are. If you'd like to talk to any one of them or even more than one of them, not at the same time, but in the next half hour, the number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. No obligation on your part whatsoever to talk with them. This is a great service they are performing. Some of these people have been doing this for a number of years in conjunction with Your Legal Rights. For workers' compensation law, it's Alice O'Sullivan, a certified specialist, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. For criminal law, it's Jeffrey Hayden, certified specialist in criminal law. For Social Security law, George Sermatis, George's second time joining us. For landlord-tenant law, we have Samer Danfora, And for employment law, we have, because we're doing an employment law program tonight, we have two attorneys, employment law attorneys, Bruce Bernstein and Ellen Mendelson, for tax law, real estate, and also who is a real estate broker is Frank Adam, if you have a question in any of that area. For patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration, Ron Rohde. And tomorrow, if you're having a problem with creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available from 8 a.m. to noon. That's Thursday. That's tomorrow at 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. Again, call a lawyer for this evening, 1-800-525-9917. If you have any labor and employment law questions that you would like to ask my guests, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. My guests are employment law attorneys Tom Lenz, a partner in the Cerritos Law Firm. Actually, it's a statewide law firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rude, and Romo, and Scott Stillman, an associate in the San Francisco law firm of McGuinn, Hilsman, and Pilevsky. Tom Lenz is also a member of the executive committee of the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, which is the funder of this particular section or segment of Your Legal Rights. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-981-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to speak to a human being. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area that you're having the problem with, and they'll do their best to set up a half an hour consultation for you with a lawyer throughout California for a half an hour. It will vary between $25 to $35 for the half hour. It's a great way to get some basic information about the problem that you may have. And we're going to start with Brad. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi. You're on the air, Brad. Go ahead.
So I have an employment hiring question that requires a little bit of background, but I'll try to be quick with it. So I went to graduate school in the Bay Area, and I was having some trouble completing my dissertation, and that trouble was compounded by a problem I developed with alcohol dependence. So I was running up against the graduation deadline and consulted the student manual, which recommended, you know, if you're having this kind of problem, come to the school administration, you know, seek support. So I did that in January of 2013. I had a meeting with my dissertation chair and the dean, where I disclosed the problem I was having, and then we sort of talked about a plan to help me get through school. So ultimately, I was able to complete my dissertation and graduate. This is a clinical psychology school. And one of the requirements for state licensure following the awarding of the doctorate is license, or rather supervised professional experience, which is often called a postdoc. So it turned out that my graduate school had a postdoc on offer. I applied for it. I had two really good interviews. After the second interview, and neither of those interviews were any sort of potentially inappropriate questions asked. But I was invited back for a third interview, in which the program director for the program that I was applying told me that she'd had a conversation with the school's administration, that it was raised to her that I was someone who had problems in school, and that they wanted me to be able to talk about my side of the story in hopes of being able to make a case for my hiring. So I talked about my recovery process, which, you know, I'm involved in ongoing professional treatment through my insurer. Told them sort of what it meant to me, like how I planned to manage it, what I would plan to do if any kind of stress or problem arose, and how I thought it might pertain to the work that I would be doing. So the program director said that she would make a case to me, or make a case for my hiring, rather, with that information that I discussed with her. But then she called a week later and said that she had been unable to do so, that the school was developing a policy, although it doesn't sound like it's actually a policy yet, that would require 2 years of sobriety for applicants.
Wow, okay. So at this point, I take it, Brad, you have not retained or talked with an attorney to determine what your rights may be?
No, I've tried to find some online, but that hasn't gone well.
Without telling us which school it is, what city is it in?
It's in Berkeley.
In Berkeley, okay. I want to get some comments. I mean, obviously, please, Brad, understand this. My guess, because of the State Bar of California's ethics rules, cannot give specific legal advice, but what we try to do is give some direction to people who are having serious problems, as you are having, in terms of trying to accomplish a lifetime goal, and get some direction. So if you would, can he take your answer off the air, or do you have questions for him that you want him to respond to, Tom and Scott?
I don't think I have any questions.
Okay, so if you'll take the response by hanging up and turning your radio back on, Brad, maybe we can give you something to actually that might be of some assistance to you. Okay.
Okay, that sounds good.
Brad,
one last detail.
Yeah.
I got the phone call about not being able to get the job about 2 weeks ago, and then the position for which I applied was reposted today.
I was reposted today. Okay, let's see if we can get some comments for you, Brad. And if you will hang up, I'd appreciate it. Also, because Berkeley is in Alameda County, let me give you the Alameda County Bar Association number. You may want to contact the Alameda County Bar Lawyer Referral Service also, and at least on an initial basis, and find out what's going on. That number is 510-302-2222. 510-302-2222. Do either of you have any comments for Brad of what he may be able to do, or what you would suggest he might want to do?
I don't. I need to preface it by we represent many local school districts and
yes.
Educational entities. So I need to just preface my comments with that. But but my thoughts are, right off the bat, this may well involve as much education law as it does employment law.
Yes.
And the particular requirements of that entity's curriculum. So, you know, without belaboring those sort of technicalities, I really do think that the suggestion of the Alameda County Bar Association may well be a good one.
And I'll jump in here too and say I think Brad's situation touches upon an important reality that almost everyone applying for a job needs to think about, and that is going back to this practical side of things. There's what the law can do for you, and then there's kind of the practical side, which is kind of, you know, do you want this job, and how are you going to respond if somebody does ask an inappropriate question?
Yeah.
And I think it really benefits people as best you can to think about how you're going to respond to an inappropriate question at an interview. So I think as much prep work as you can do, get somebody who you know, maybe do some role playing, and if you have something in your background that may come up, it can help to just do some practice and figure out how you're going to respond to a situation.
Are you saying, Scott, that you think it was inappropriate in this subsequent interview that Brad told us about for the woman who was interviewing him to say, please tell us about the problem that you have? Was that an inappropriate question for her to ask, do you believe?
I'm not sure that I have enough to say whether or not
okay.
it was inappropriate, but I will say that it's something that Brad certainly needed to be aware of and
yeah.
may continue to need to be aware of as he faces
yes.
future potential interviews.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
anything you can do ahead of the time to just think about how you're going to respond to these things
mm-hmm.
would be very helpful.
Yeah, yeah. It might be certainly helpful to Brad to get to sit down with a lawyer and get some recommendations as to how Brad might deal with this in the future.
Absolutely.
From an employment law attorney who, what would you recommend that he would want to meet with an employment law attorney who represents employees and or employers, or is, does it make any difference, Tom?
I think it would be, I mean, there's an interesting line of between student and employee,
yes,
that continues to develop in the field of labor and employment law. I think most likely it, for him, he would want an attorney who represents employees, probably in the public sector, someone who has experience in that realm, because it's different and the rules can vary from the private sector.
Okay. So I hope you heard that, Brad. You want to speak to a lawyer who helps employees, who represents employees in the public sector. Also, I want to let you all know about tomorrow at the San Mateo County Law Library, that's Thursday, May 29th, there will be a presentation dealing with contractors. Home improvements enhance the value and enjoyment of your home. Attorney Richard Pierce will discuss tips on how to select a licensed and qualified contractor, negotiate a clear contract, etc. This will be tomorrow, Thursday at noon at the San Mateo County Law Library, which is on Hamilton Street in Redwood City. It's right across the street from the Hall of Justice in Redwood City. You're invited to join. You can bring your own lunch. Usually it takes about an hour for the presentation to take place, and the law library is at 710 Hamilton Street. If you'd like more information about it, you can call the library. It's law library at 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. And by the way, let me give you our phone number again if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment to my guests on the air. It's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. My guests are employment law attorneys Tom Lenz and Scott Stillman. They're both experienced attorneys in employment law. Tom is also a member of the executive committee of the labor and employment law section of the state, the executive committee, I should say, of the labor and employment law section of the state bar. Let me tell you who, and also it's called a lawyer night. I want to make sure that you take advantage of the fact that these lawyers are here. It's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. I want to thank very much Alice O'Sullivan, Workers' Compensation Law Certified Specialist, former chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization. Jeff Hayden, Certified Specialist in Criminal Law. George Cermetis, a Social Security Law Attorney. Samer Danfora, Landlord-Tenant Law. We have two employment law attorneys because of the fact we're doing employment law on the air, Bruce Bernstein and Ellen Mendelson. For tax law, real estate, or if you need to talk with a real estate broker, Frank Adam. Patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration, Ron Rohde. And tomorrow, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available between 8 a.m. and noon. That's Thursday, 8 a.m. to noon. You can call his number. No obligation whatsoever. He's down in L.A., but he's been incredibly gracious with his time. 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and you get his answering machine, leave your name and phone number. Say that you've listened to this and are calling because of the radio program Your Legal Rights. He'll call you back. All right. For those of you, I think we have someone. Yeah. David, welcome to Your Legal Rights. And then I have a question about felony convictions. But, David, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Yeah, I had two different questions on two completely different questions. One was, when I was young, when I was about 18, I would, every once in a while, you know, if I got pulled over by a cop and he ran my Social Security number, it would show up that I was a wanted felon, you know, Jose Garcia from New York, and that somebody had been using my Social Security number for years. And luckily enough, he was a number of inches shorter and tattoos and all sorts of things, so I was kind of fairly nuts.
You didn't have those tattoos on you, huh?
Right. But I'm just wondering whether or not if someone was using your Social Security number, would that come to your account when you retired?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know that my guests know anything about that. I think that is an issue for someone who practices in the area of Social Security law. Either of you have any comments about that?
It's not an area that I deal with very much.
All right. Neither do, David. What's the second question?
I'd heard rumors that major corporations hire, immigrants, undocumented, and they'll hire them for about, if they have a two-week pay period, they'll hire them for about 9 days, and then they'll call the INS on themselves.
Oh, my.
And then basically they'll be able to use their slave wages, slave labor, for 9 days. Then they'll get everybody deported and they won't have to pay a paycheck.
Wow.
So I'm wondering if you're familiar with this and whether it's a common occurrence.
By the way, on your first question, before my guests responded, the second question, George Sermatis is here with us for Call a Lawyer Night. He practices Social Security law. You may want to talk to him about it if you call after finishing with us on the air. Call 1-800-525-9917. Okay, on the second question, what comments do you have for David? Tom, please.
Yeah, this is not something that I would say I see frequently, but I've certainly known of situations where employers have willfully hired people who they know not to be properly documented, and they've taken steps that are, not appropriate under the law to discharge the employees, to pay them less than minimum wage. And I think that a number of the laws that we deal with in labor, wage and hour, and so forth, there are protections against retaliation for bringing complaints. And I think calling the immigration authorities after you knowingly brought them into your employ would be a form of retaliation if you're doing it essentially to get rid of an issue.
Yeah, and I do think that wage theft is a huge issue across the country, and that one that governments have actually started to become lots more aware of, and you see a lot more activity in that area because you're seeing it kind of more and more. And one thing that's really important for people to know is the California Labor Code and the laws here, they apply to undocumented workers.
Yes.
So just because somebody is an undocumented worker does not mean that they can't get paid a minimum wage, and it does not mean that they can't pursue their rights to receive that wage if they're not given it.
A number of years ago, David, I had in my position as a deputy district attorney for San Mateo County a case against someone very much like you're talking about who took advantage of picking up men who were waiting on the corner to be picked up to do some construction work, etc., and then he wouldn't pay them their wages. Fortunately, someone, and these were Spanish-speaking gentlemen who were the employees who weren't paid. Fortunately, there was someone in the county who heard about this, got these men to file complaints with my office. I brought an action, an unfair business practices action under the civil code, the business and professions code, for a civil action, and actually got him to pay them their wages. Plus, he also ended up with a penalty issued by the court, a monetary penalty. So the district attorney's office can do some good work on something like this if it is alerted to it.
And the state labor commissioner, Julie Hsu, is actually taking very seriously these issues of wage theft and has I think made very clear pronouncements that will be an issue that where the state finds it, they will attack it. They will try to end those sorts of practices.
David, thank you for your questions.
Yeah, sure.
And I
think
call while you have time and speak to George Sermatis, will you?
All right, we'll do. And the Bill of Rights works for everybody, whether
we hope so
or not.
We hope it does. We
Great.
Hope it does. Yeah.
Great.
Take care. Thanks for calling. All right. For On the Air, 1-415-841-4134. For Call a Lawyer Night, it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Here's a question that was brought into the studio. What about felony convictions? Can an employer ask a prospective employee if he, she has been convicted of a felony? San Francisco and Oakland, I believe, this is the caller, I believe, are considering, quote, banning the box, end quotes, from their employment applications. Would you talk about this a little bit, please? I know we talked about this before we went on the air, and I'd like to have you talk a little bit about this.
Absolutely. And Scott has the most current information on the local ordinances, but as a general matter, an employer is not allowed to ask about arrests. They're allowed to ask about certain convictions. They're not allowed to ask about marijuana convictions that are more than 2 years old. But there have been initiatives locally that Scott had all sorts of great information before we began. So I'll turn it over to him.
Go ahead, Scott, if you would.
Yeah, there's a bunch of cities that are actually joining up to this Ban the Box movement, and what that means is essentially taking away off of the employment application a box that says, have you ever been convicted of a crime in the past or a felony, for instance. And San Francisco has just recently passed what's called the Fair Chance Ordinance, and it applies to private employers with 20 or more employees, and it says that you cannot ask about some applicant's criminal history until after the first job interview. And so it really gives potential applicants who have a criminal background, it gives them finally that chance to get in the door and actually meet somebody, have the chance to have an interview, realize that you could do this job very well and you're a qualified person, as opposed to a situation where you file with the potential employer a paper application where it says, yes, I have been convicted of a crime in the past, and you're automatically moved to a denied box.
Or to the trash can.
Or to the trash can.
Yeah.
So I really think that this is a great step in the right direction. And the National Employment Law Project, NELP, is a great resource for people who want to look further into this. They have a lot of resources about what questions are allowed and how to respond to potential inquiries.
Can you Google that just by putting in the initials NELP, N-E-L-P, or do you have to put in National Employment Law Program?
Project. NELP will come up.
Pardon
just,
me.
Just N-E-L-P.
N-E-L-P will come up.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good to know. All right. Any other comments you have on the felony convictions, et cetera?
I think that it's an interesting concept. I think many times employers' perception of an applicant is immediately colored once they are aware of a criminal background. Mm-hmm. And it's an initiative that I'll be curious to see how it works in the cities that enact it, and whether it does get individuals who have been convicted back into the workforce leading productive
lives.
Well,
I think, obviously, hopefully, people have been rehabilitated after having had a conviction, perhaps having some local jail time, possibly even going to state prison. But we don't want to, hopefully, we don't want to write off that person, and that's why we need some kind of a law protecting these people, as Scott, you have discussed.
No, I think that's a really important point, because in order to decrease recidivism, ultimately, it's going to require bringing people who, have harmed the community through criminal activity but have learned from that harm. We need to bring them back, and job and employment is such an essential part of reducing recidivism. And so I think this could actually go a long way in accomplishing what is a tough task.
Yes, it certainly is. All right, 1-415-841-4134. If you have questions or comments for On the Air, for Call a Lawyer Night, it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Elaine, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi.
My question is, I'm considering taking a Family Leave Act. And I just wanted to hear the attorney's thoughts about if I did that at, like, for a year, can I keep my job?
What is, when you say, if I may ask you, Elaine, you're saying for a year. That's a long period of time. May I ask if you could give us just a little bit more information why you want to take off a whole year?
Taking care of my elder mother.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you want to take care of your elder mother. And would like to take advantage of the Family Leave Act.
Yeah.
And you're wondering if, although I think you would accept the fact that if you are able to take off on the Family Leave Act, you're not going to be receiving any pay, but you want to find out if that job at the end of the year will still be there for you, right?
Yes, I've heard of stories where people did that and came back and their jobs weren't there.
Yeah, well, let me get some comments from my guests. Tom, you want to start?
Sure. The family leave laws essentially provide protection to employers of more than 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if your employer has at least 50 people and you have worked a requisite number of hours, and the specific numbers, I'll avoid that for purposes of this discussion, but if you are eligible under that hours requirement and your company is large enough, you could be entitled to up to 12 weeks of leave in a year. So you're looking at essentially 3 months, which is not going to carry you through the year.
Yeah.
And that's 3 months that's job protected, meaning you have a right to reinstatement to your job or a similar position.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this question may well turn upon things that you may know better than we do in terms of your employer's policy and their practice in terms of dealing with others. Sometimes policy and practice don't always fit together well, but sometimes they do. And I think that's perhaps warranting some homework to study that, to see how others have been treated. Many employers who have employees they value will bend over backwards to keep them. And I think if your relationship is such where you are an important employee to your employer, maybe they will work out an arrangement with you that will meet your needs.
Well, how long you worked for this employer, Elaine?
About 15 years.
15 years, yeah. Well, there's a nice long relationship.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
What city?
In Oakland.
In Oakland. You know, and you have not consulted with an attorney yet, have you, Elaine?
Oh, no.
I think you should. I think you should.
Before I take that step, you're thinking I should talk to an attorney.
I think so.
And
what do you think, Tom and Scott?
I don't see a downside to at least getting some strategic advice.
Yeah.
What's the best way for me to play this in a way that's going to work and isn't going to lash back at me? It's not the sort of thing where you want an attorney to send a demand letter, probably.
Uh-uh.
But to get an idea of a roadmap for where to go and what your options are, I think that's very prudent.
Here's my suggestion for you, Elaine. Further, the Alameda County Bar Association has a lawyer referral service. I suggest you start with that.
Yeah,
would you like the phone number?
I've got it.
You've got it. Yeah. I think in terms of you're trying to avoid a problem down the road, it doesn't hurt to educate yourself. At the very least, you'll be out maybe $35 by going and seeing an attorney through the lawyer referral service. It may be that you might want to find that it would make more sense to spend more time with an attorney than half an hour and really have a game plan. But I wish you very good luck.
Yeah, thank you for the advice.
Yeah,
and
certainly.
And make sure you bring your workplace policy with you. Because that is really going to be an important document and may actually even entitle you to some leave with pay. Because a lot of employers recognize that it's hard to take leave if you're not going to get paid, and they have policies that will give you some funds during that leave.
Yeah.
So definitely check your policy.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Elaine.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
We've come to the end of the program. I thank you, gentlemen, very much for joining us. It's very nice to have you back on the program. We had a very good get-together some weeks ago, and it's nice to have you back. And, Tom, you're joining us in the studio here. This is terrific.
It's a privilege to be here, and I am grateful for the opportunity anytime.
Well, thank you very much. My guests have been Tom Lentz, partner in the Cerritos and Statewide Law Firm of Atkinson, Andelson, Loya, Rood, and Romo. He's also a member of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. My other guest is Scott Stillman, an associate in the San Francisco law firm of McGuinn, Hilsman, and Pilepsky. Let me just tell you that our production staff people are program engineer Joanne Marr, production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this particular segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Your Legal Rights is also funded by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, of course, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. If you're wondering if you should have a will, a trust, or if you should update your will, or how you might want to protect your heirs upon your death, we're going to have another program on basic estate planning issues next week. My guest will be certified specialists in estate planning, trust and probate law, James Efting and Dan Brown. I hope you'll join us then. Thanks for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.